This is Audible.
Podium Publishing presents The Zero Curse, Book 2 of The Zero Enigma, written by Christopher G. Nuttall, performed by Saskia Mullerveld. Prologue. It was a hot summer day when I realized, for the first time, just how vulnerable I truly was. I was 10 at the time, and despite everything, I hadn't given up hope that I might have a spark of magic. It wasn't uncommon for magicians not to show much, if any, signs of magical talent before turning 12, when they would be schooled in magic. Or so my parents kept telling me, as they tried to teach me more and more arcane disciplines in the hopes of shaking something loose. My sisters were streaking ahead, and I hadn't even managed to cast a single spell. If I hadn't been able to pick up the family sword, which could only be handled by my bloodline, I would have wondered if I was truly my father's daughter. I could sense my father's disappointment and my mother's concern, even though they'd tried to hide it. They had to wonder if I, Caitlin Aguirre, would bring down the whole family. Our bloodline was strong in magic. A child born without the ability to use it would shame us. It was a hot month, the hottest on record. My sisters and I would have loved to spend it in the swimming pool or paddling near the beach. Our friends, Alana and Bella's friends more accurately, had already decamped, leaving Charlotte for their country estates where it was cooler. We wanted to go with them too, but we hadn't been allowed to leave. Great Aunt Stregaria had come to stay. I still find it hard to believe that Great-Aunt Stregaria was my father's aunt. She was a tall, dark woman, the tallest I've ever seen, her hair hanging down loosely in a manner that signified she was an unmarried woman. It was easy to understand why. I couldn't help thinking that she looked rather like a vulture, with an angular face and dark eyes that seemed to glitter with malice as she peered down at us from her lofty height. She was one of those unpleasant adults who firmly believed that children should neither be seen nor heard, and she hadn't been shy about making her opinions known. She'd been scathing about my failings in magic, and she'd drilled my sisters in basic manners until even Alana was sick of her. I don't know why she bothered to visit us. I still don't. She complained about everything, from the food to the heat. We were in trouble if we didn't curtsy just right when she saw us, and when we deliberately stayed out of her way. She expected us to wear our formal clothes at all times, even though it was far too hot. She expected us to wait on her at table, as if we were common maids. She'd get up late, have a long breakfast, and then spend an hour or two with Dad before, well, we didn't know what she was doing. We didn't really care either. We just wanted her gone. One day, the hottest day of the summer, we managed to slip away early. Mum didn't say anything to us, let alone drag us back into the house. By then I think she was sick and tired of Great-Aunt Stregaria making herself at home. She had a home of her own. I rather hoped it was a cave somewhere high up a mountainside, but I doubted it. Why couldn't she go back home and stop bothering us? Great-Aunt Stregaria was the sort of person who gave magic users a bad name. There was a little marshy pond down by the grove, one we'd paddled in when we were younger. We thought it was just far enough from the house, while still being part of the grounds, to escape detection, at least for a while. Dad hadn't given Great-Aunt Stregaria any access to the wards, we thought. She'd have been summoning us all the time if she'd had control. We took off our expensive shoes and splashed through the water, enjoying the cool liquid against our feet. For once, even Alana was too relieved to be away from the witch to indulge in a little malice. We were, just for an hour or two, a normal trio of sisters. It didn't last, of course. Great-Aunt Stregaria came striding through the grove in high dudgeon, her face twisted with rage. I don't think she was mad at us, specifically, but she was mad. We froze, fear holding us in place as solidly as any spell, as she stamped towards us. I had no idea where she'd been, or what she'd been doing, but... "You little brats!" she snapped. In hindsight, I suspect she wanted to take her anger out on someone. get out of there!
Normally we would have obeyed instantly, but we were hot and sweaty and very, very tired of her. We didn't move. Great Aunt Stregaria lifted her hand and cast a spell. I saw a flash of brilliant greenish light an instant before the spell struck me, struck us. Alana screamed. I might have screamed too, I'm not sure, as magic flared around her. My skin tingled unpleasantly, as if I was caught in a thunderstorm. I had an instant to see my black hand turning green and warty before the world grew larger. I squeezed my eyes tightly shut as I splashed into the water, then jerked them open as my legs started to move automatically. The tiny pool, so shallow that it barely reached our knees, was suddenly huge. I broke the water just in time to see Alana and Bella become frogs. My head swam as I grappled with the sudden change. It wasn't the first time I'd been transfigured, but this was far worse. There were no safeties worked into the spell. I could feel the frog's mind gnawing away at mine, threatening to erode my thoughts. The water was practically hypnotic, pulling at me. If I hadn't been panicking, if I hadn't managed to hop out of the water, I might have been lost. The spell on me wore off in an hour, although it wasn't until 2 years later that I understood why. By then, Dad had literally thrown Great Aunt Stregaria out of the hall and ordered her never to return. The spell on my sisters lasted nearly a week before it finally collapsed. Dad was delighted, utterly over the moon. He insisted I had a definite magical talent. I had to have something, he reasoned, to escape such a complex spell. Our parents had been unable to unravel it for themselves. I knew better. Alana and Bella had been trapped, but neither of them had been in any danger of losing themselves in an animal's mind. Their magic had even fought the spell when it was first cast. But I had no magic to defend myself. The protective spells Mum and Dad had laid on me had never been anchored properly, because there was nothing for them to anchor to. It was sheer luck that I'd survived long enough for the spell to unravel. I was defenseless. Anyone could cast a spell on me. It was a lesson I should never have forgotten. I was a zero, and being powerless was my curse. Chapter 1. The workbench was ugly. It had been made of dark brown almond tree wood, once upon a time. It would have gleamed under the light when it was new. Now it was covered in burn marks and scratches and pieces of mismatched wood, where its previous owner had replaced broken drawers and covering with newer material. Half the drawers were tight, so tight that opening them was a struggle. The remainder was so loose that I felt I'd have to replace them sooner rather than later. And I'd found 5 secret compartments, concealed by careful design rather than magic, one of which had been crammed with gold coins from a bygone era. Yes, it was ugly, but it was mine, and I loved it. The workbench had been in the family for centuries, according to my father. It had belonged to Anna the Artificer once upon a time, before it had gone into storage after her death. Her children hadn't had the heart to use it for themselves, apparently. None of them had come close to matching their mother when it came to forging talent. If there hadn't been stories of her fighting a duel with a prospective suitor, I'd have wondered if she'd been a zero. There were no stories about her forging objects of power, at least none that had been passed down through the ages. But some of her devices of power had lasted nearly a decade without maintenance and repair. Very few forgers could make that claim. Dad had given me the workbench, along with a workroom and suite of my very own. He'd said that I was the first person in centuries to live up to Anna's legacy, the first person to deserve to sit at her workbench and forge. Personally, I thought he felt a little guilty. My sisters, Alana and Berdonna, had long since had their rooms decorated to mark their progress in magic. But I'd never managed to cast even the simplest of spells. Until recently, everyone had assumed I was either a very slow learner or a freak. And I was a freak. Just a very valuable freak, I thought. The thought made me smile. It was good to be appreciated, to be something more than my family's private shame.
I still didn't understand why I could forge objects of power, where everyone else was limited to devices of power. But it gave me a talent none of my sisters could match. Alana had never been a good forger. Bella had been too lazy to learn more than the basics, and only then because Dad had pushed her nose to the grindstone. Yet it wouldn't have mattered if she spent every waking hour at the workbench. I was the only person who could forge objects of power. "I can still turn you into a toad," Alana had said last night. She'd come home from school along with Bella. "And you can't do that to me without help, can you?" "No," I'd said. My sister was a spiteful person, now more than ever. I was careful to wear protective trinkets every time I saw her. "But anyone can turn me into a toad." I leaned back and surveyed my new domain. Dad hadn't skimped on outfitting the chamber either. Two walls were lined with bookcases, sagging under the weight of reference textbooks, and a small collection of reprinted volumes from the Thousand-Year Empire. I wasn't the only one who could read them. I'd had old script drilled into my head before I'd reached my first decade. But I was the only one who could make use of them. The instructions for making objects of power were easy to find, if one had access to a decent library. Yet something had been left unsaid. It had been sheer luck that I'd realized that the missing ingredient, something so obvious the ancient magicians had never bothered to write down, had been someone like me. Maybe I couldn't use magic personally. It didn't make me useless. A second workbench, covered with handmade tools, sat near the door, next to a furnace, a kiln, a set of cupboards and a giant translucent cauldron. Dad had crammed one of the cupboards with everything a budding forger would want, while Mum had filled the other with potion ingredients. I hated to think how much it must have cost, even though I knew my family was rich, and that my sisters had earned rewards for themselves over the years. Being best friends with a commoner had taught me more than anyone had realized. I was almost embarrassed at the thought of bringing Rose into my workroom. A single gemstone, like the ones hidden in one of my drawers, would be more than enough to buy and sell her entire family. I put the thought aside as I carefully pulled on a set of protective robes, tied my hair into a tight bun, and inspected myself in the mirror. My dark face was marred by a nasty burn from when I'd managed to splash hot potion on myself, although it was healing nicely. I had a nasty feeling that I'd have forger's hands, hands covered in burn marks, by the time I was 20, even though my tutors had drummed safety precautions into me from the very beginning. It wasn't something that bothered me, although Alana had made snide remarks about me not having ladylike hands. It was proof that I was more than just another aristocratic brat entering high society. Not that high society ever really cared about me, I thought. It was a grim thought. I'd gone to birthday parties, of course, doing the social whirl that ensured that everyone who was anyone in Shalit knew everyone else. But birthday parties for young magicians had been hazardous for me, all the more so as rumors about my magic, or lack of it, had started to spread. Very few people had grasped that I had no magic whatsoever, but it was clear that I was a very late bloomer. No one had wanted to be associated with me, for fear that whatever had laid me low might be catching. I'd had no true friends until I'd gone to Jude's. Now, I swallowed hard. I wasn't looking forward to going back to school, even though I declined when Dad had offered to let me stay home. Rose was there after all. I couldn't leave her alone, not after everything she's done for me. And maybe things would be better, now I'd beaten Isabella. The school's honor code was strict. Isabella had been beaten fairly, and that was all that mattered. Unless she reasoned she hadn't been beaten fairly after all. It wasn't an unarguable case. One by one I removed the protective amulets and earrings I'd forged over the last couple of weeks, placing them on the small table by the mirror. I felt as if I was naked, utterly unprotected, when I was done, even though the workroom was locked. I'd spent the last 6 years trying, and often failing, to avoid increasingly nasty pranks from my sisters, pranks that I'd never been able to see coming. Even something as simple as sitting down to dinner could turn into a trial if Alana had had time to hex or jinx the chair. Now, I was protected, as long as I wore the earrings. But I didn't know if I could wear them while forging without ruining my work. Buttoning up my robe, I strode across to the workbench and looked down at the longsword, resting in a web of silver netting. It was big, easily too big for me to carry, even using both hands. I wasn't exactly a weakling. Forging requires physical strength as well as dexterity. But it was still too big for me. Sir Griffin's, the man who'd commissioned the sword, was easily twice my size. He had muscles on his muscles. And yet, normally even he would have trouble carrying the sword. I couldn't help thinking that a kingsman, a servant of his most regal majesty, King Rufus, wouldn't consider the longsword a practical weapon. But it did have its advantages. I smiled as I studied the blade, carefully planning out the next step. Casting the blade itself had been simple, a task that anyone could do. Dad had even offered to have one of his apprentices do it for me, pointing out that I didn't have to waste my time on it. And yet I'd declined. There was too great a chance that someone else's involvement would taint the metal, making it impossible to turn the longsword into an object of power. I intended to experiment once I returned to school, to see just how much preliminary work I could pass to someone else without ruining the final effect. And besides, I wanted to impress Sir Griffin's. The swordsmen of the Thousand Year Empire had had swords that could cut through anything, according to legend. Their blades had been as light as feathers, in the hands of their true owners. Their scabbards had had magic of their own, healing wounds and boosting strength when swordsmen met in combat. And there had been some truth in the legends. I'd seen blades passed down through the years that had been magic when wielded by the descendants of the original owners. My family sword, buried in the family hearthstone, had powers of its own. You simply couldn't buy a weapon like that for love or money. Even if a family sold off a priceless heirloom, which would have forced them to put a price on priceless, the magic wouldn't work for anyone outside the direct line. Whatever rites and rituals had been used to transfer a blade to a new owner had been lost hundreds of years ago. Sir Griffin's had been obsessed with owning such a sword for as long as I'd been alive. He'd been pushing my father to either crack the secret behind the blades or come up with something new, something that would allow a device of power to survive against counterspells. Every year Dad had tried something new. Every year the blade had either snapped in combat or lost its magic at terrifying speed. Dad and his apprentices had gone through the books hundreds of times, trying dozens of variations in a desperate bid to crack the secret. They'd known the reward would be massive if they succeeded. The kingsmen needed such blades to do their work. But they'd failed. The problem had seemed insurmountable. I reached for my notebook and opened it, checking my work one final time. The calculations hadn't been that difficult, although I'd had to adapt some of the runes to adjust for modern-day materials. Whoever had come up with the original swords had been a genius, as well as a zero. The network of runes that channeled magic into the blade had to be precise, or the spell would simply refuse to work. Thankfully, I'd learnt the value of precision long ago. My sisters had enough power to compensate for deviations, often very big deviations, from perfect spell forms. But lesser magicians needed to be precise. Not that it mattered to me in any case. I could speak a spell perfectly, with all the accent and the right syllables, and nothing would happen. And yet, I can forge objects of power, I reminded myself, as I picked up the etching tool and headed over to the sword. I am unique. I'd forged the etching tool myself, as tradition demanded. I wasn't too sure if it mattered. The harmony most magicians experience when they use tools they'd crafted themselves was alien to me. But it wasn't a tradition I wanted to abandon. Forging had given me a sense of purpose, of achievement, a long time before I'd realized what I could do. And besides, it kept my mind off uncomfortable truths. There were things I didn't want to think about, even now. Bending over the sword, I carefully pressed the etching tool against the metal and carved out the first rune. The metal was softer than it should have been. The silver cradle made it easier to carve, although I didn't pretend to understand why. But I still moved with immense care. I didn't have time to start again from scratch, not when I was due back at school in a couple of days. Besides, I wasn't sure what would happen if I melted down the sword to reuse the metal. In theory, it shouldn't make any difference. In practice, I wasn't so sure. I'd seen forging go horribly wrong because the metal had already been tainted by magic. The first rune fell into place, neatly. I took a moment to catch my breath. Sweat was already trickling down my back, and then started on the second. My calculations insisted that the magic wouldn't take effect until the last rune was in place, but I kept a wary eye on the blade anyway, just in case. A surge of magic that seemingly came out of nowhere would be dangerous, not least because I couldn't sense the surge and take cover until it was too late. As far as magic was concerned, I was the blind girl in the kingdom of the sighted. My hands were aching by the time I'd worked my way through a dozen runes. I stepped backwards, taking a deep breath. Magicians who forged devices of power claimed that the work couldn't be paused once it was underway, but I'd never had a problem when I'd forged objects of power. I rather suspected that my lack of magic actually kept the runes from activating early, too early to let the spell forms take shape properly. It was something else I intended to test when I had a moment. Rose and I would have a lot of fun testing the limits of my abilities. And then the lanterns dimmed, just slightly. I tensed. Someone was outside the main door. No, someone was trying to use magic to open the main door. It couldn't be my parents. Mum was in the garden, picking herbs for a potion she wanted to try. Dad was playing host to our very unwelcome guest. And besides, they would have knocked, loudly, if they'd wanted to come in. Very few people would enter a magician's workroom without permission. The servants certainly wouldn't dare. My list of suspects was very short indeed. Alana, I thought. She's been quiet, too quiet since Dad yanked all three of us out of school. I slipped back to the mirror, moving as quietly as I could. I'd had far too much practice in sneaking around over the years, although it wasn't as much use as I'd hoped. Even a relatively young magician like my sister could cast wards to protect her belongings. Picking up one of the earrings, I cupped it in my hand and walked to the other workbench as I heard the sound of someone opening the door. It was very quiet, so quiet that I knew the intruder meant trouble. There's nothing quite so alarming as the sound of someone doing everything in their power not to be heard. Alana must have assumed that her silencing spell had actually worked. It had. But the runes I'd carved into the door had drawn on the magic to dim the lanterns, then cancelled the spell. Good thing she didn't cast the spell on herself, I thought, as I kept the earring pressed against my skin. It should make a difference, according to the books, as long as it was touching me. She might have noticed that the spell had failed if she'd intended to ensure that she couldn't hear either. I kept my back to the door as stealthy footsteps echoed down the tiny corridor, even though I wanted to turn or run. I had too many bad memories of being hexed to feel calm when my sister was behind me. Alana had to be annoyed about something. Our parents had told her, in no uncertain terms, not to use magic anywhere near my workroom. Even Alana would have hesitated, normally, to defy Dad. He wasn't the sort of person anyone defied twice. "Freeze!" Alana said. I felt the earring grow warm in my hand, tingling just for a second. Alana made a sound that cut off so sharply that it made me jump. I turned, slowly. Alana was standing there, utterly unmoving. A surprised expression dominated her frozen face. I walked towards her slowly, wondering just how long she'd intended to freeze me. She knew, now, that spells simply didn't cling to me for long. It was very possible that she'd never bothered to calculate just how long her spell should have left me frozen. And spells do cling to her, I thought, feeling a flash of vindictive glee. Alana was a powerful and skilled magician for her age, but I didn't think she could unfreeze herself without being able to move her hands. Even an upperclassman would have problems. She might have trapped herself until midnight. "That was stupid," I said, doing my best to imitate the tone my mother used when she was reprimanding us for being foolish. "Using magic in here? You could have triggered an explosion." That wasn't true, I thought, but as long as she believed it was true. I walked around behind her, wrapped my arms around her chest and picked her up. It wasn't easy. Alana was lighter than me, I thought. She was certainly skinny, but she was as stiff and unmoving as a board. I half-carried, half-dragged her out of the workroom door, down the corridor and through the door into the main house. It was quiet, too quiet. I glanced in either direction, then manhandled Alana into the nearest closet and closed the door. She'd be stuck there until someone found her, or the spell wore off. "Or if she manages to free herself," I thought. My sister had always been an overachiever when it came to magic. She might just make it. I shrugged as I turned and walked back to the workroom. It was much more likely that she'd be discovered by one of the maids. They'd been working overtime the last few days. I rather suspected that whoever found Alana would be tempted to leave her, but the maids would be reluctant to risk being fired. Alana was a vindictive person at the best of times. "And she left me in a cupboard too, hundreds of times," I thought. Perhaps I should have felt guilty, but I didn't. She did far worse to me. I sighed as I stepped through the door. I had work to finish before dinner time. My parents would let me work until the wee small hours if I wanted, but I knew I wouldn't be in the mood. I knew it. Our family has the best chef in Shalott, but I wasn't looking forward to dinner. Great Aunt Stregaria was coming to tea. Chapter 2. I was tempted, very tempted, to pretend I hadn't heard the dinner gong when it echoed through the house. But I knew my mother would not be fooled. She'd spelled the gong to ensure that anyone within the grounds could hear it, even if they were in the library or a sealed workroom. I finished the last of the runes, put my protective charms back into place, and then hurried to my bedroom. The maids had already laid my clothes on the bed. At least they don't have to worry about me warding my room, I thought sourly, as I closed the door behind me. My sisters could use magic to keep their possessions safe and unhexed, but I wasn't so lucky. They just have to worry about keeping Great Aunt Stregaria happy instead. I couldn't help feeling a flicker of sympathy. This time, thankfully, my parents had not insisted that we wait hand and foot on the old crone, but that meant that the duty was shifted to the younger maids. I didn't think there was any crime that deserved such a horrific punishment. If Great Aunt Stregaria was rude and thoroughly unpleasant to us, her nieces, I dreaded to think how horrible she must be to minor family. I wouldn't have been surprised if I'd been told the maids had quit on the spot, rather than work for us any longer. I quickly discovered that the dress was as frilly and absurd as I feared. Mum didn't normally bother making us dress for dinner, but with Great Aunt Stregaria at the table, we had to look our best. I glanced wistfully at the shower, then at the grandfather clock my parents had given me after I returned home. There wasn't time to do more than wash my hands and splash water on my face before I got dressed. Being late for a formal dinner, even a dinner that only featured one guest, was the sort of thing that would lead to a frank exchange of views with my mother. She detested Great Aunt Stregaria, but she detested rudeness even more. I pulled on the wretched dress, then inspected myself in the mirror. The long white gown looked faintly absurd on my lanky form, even though it contrasted nicely with the color of my skin. I was lucky that Mum hadn't joined the other high society ladies when it came to the latest fashions for growing girls. I'd seen dresses that were so absurdly complex that the wearer needed two maids to help them get the dresses on and off. I couldn't help feeling as though the girls were forced to wear them, which made me wonder why the adults wore similar dresses. But then the dictates of fashion had always been a mystery to me. Mum would have to use magic to force me into such a dress, I thought. I smiled at the thought, even though it wasn't really amusing. Thankfully, my mother had given me something relatively comfortable. Alana might enjoy wearing ballroom gowns that were really scaled-down adult dresses, but I never had. I was not going to walk around wearing a fanned-out dress so large that sitting down at the dinner table would prove impossible. I'd long since come to believe that the reason society ladies stayed so thin was because they couldn't sit down to dinner, while eating on one's feet was regarded as bad manners. But perhaps it had something more to do with the formal dancing afterwards. Pulling my hair down, I braided it into a long ponytail and inspected it in the mirror. Great Aunt Stregaria would sniff, I was sure, if there was even a single hair out of place. She'd probably be looking for some reason to complain if I knew her. It was a mystery to me why anyone asked her back for a second time. I was fairly sure that my father hadn't invited her, not after what had happened 2 years ago. But that did raise the question of why she'd come. And why Dad let her through the gate, I thought, as I clipped on my earrings and concealed a bracelet high up my sleeve. Mum banned her from the estate after she used her magic on us. The second gong rang, the sound echoing through the house. I swallowed hard. The prospect of facing Great Aunt Stregaria again was enough to make me want to run away, and headed for the door. June, the youngest of the maids, stood outside, looking as if she was nerving herself up to knock. I don't know why she was so worried. It wasn't as if she was dancing attendance on Great Aunt Stregaria. In her place, I would have been thrilled to be well away from the guest wing.
"You look lovely, my lady," she said.
"Thank you," I said tartly. The dress might not have been uncomfortable, but it wasn't what I liked to wear. "Leave the room alone. I'll clean it up later." June curtsied, a flicker of something crossing her face. I felt a stab of guilt, which blurred into the butterflies in my stomach. It was probably too late to commit some hideous crime that would get me sent to bed without supper. And even if I did, my mother would probably insist that having to go to dinner was a worse punishment than going without. An evening with Great Aunt Stregaria would feel like an eternity. I touched the bracelet on my arm as I walked down the corridor, passing a long row of portraits that glowered down at me disapprovingly. I'd often wondered just how I fitted into the family, even though I could draw and wield the family sword. The Aguirre family dates all the way back to the Thousand-Year Empire, if you believe our historians. We have always been powerful magicians, counselors to kings, sometimes even kingmakers in our own right. My lack of magic had shamed the entire line. Alana had told me, more than once, that I'd be disowned, or worse, the moment she took over the family. There had been times when I feared my parents would disown me well before they died. "And now they know what I can do," I thought. "They don't want to disown me now." A cold shiver ran down my spine as I reached the formal dining room. It was immense, easily large enough to accommodate a couple of hundred people. The large table in the center of the chamber looked tiny, faintly absurd compared to the immensity of the room. I would have preferred the family dining room, which was smaller and more comfortable, but my mother clearly had other ideas. Perhaps she was hinting that Great Aunt Stregaria was far from welcome. I rather doubted Great Aunt Stregaria had gotten the message. My father sat at one end of the table, his face utterly expressionless. My mother sat at the other, her lips so thin with disapproval that they practically vanished. Great Aunt Stregaria sat next to my father, her dark eyes cold and hard. Belladonna, my other sister, sat on the far side, as far from our unwelcome guest as she could, without being unbearably rude. The tension in the air was so thick that you could cut it with a knife.
"Caitlin," Dad said.
He rose, indicating the seat next to Great Aunt Stregaria.
"Please, take a seat."
I nodded, not trusting myself to speak. My mouth was dry. Sitting next to Great Aunt Stregaria, I would sooner have sat next to a basilisk. or a dragon. At least it would have been over quickly. I walked around the table, pausing long enough to curtsy to my mother, then took a seat. Courtesy forbade me from inching the chair away from the vindictive old crone. Great-Aunt Stregaria turned to look at me. I looked back, fighting down the urge to cringe back in my chair. It was hard to believe that she was related to my father, even though I'd seen her wield the family sword too. My father was a tall, powerfully built man. Great-Aunt Stregaria was slight, but with an attitude of power and menace that made her look like a vulture eyeing wounded prey. Her skin was still flawless, her hair as black as night. I couldn't help wondering if she used magic to keep it that way. My father was 20 or so years younger than her, and he was already showing signs of going grey. Perhaps it's having us kids, I thought, as I turned my attention to the table. The maids had covered the table with a white cloth, then laid out a dozen sets of cutlery. Great-Aunt Stregaria never married, let alone had children. I should have felt sorry for her, I knew. Even now, Great-Aunt Stregaria wore her hair down, signifying an unmarried woman of marriageable age. And yet she had never married, never had children. It was one of the reasons her brother, my grandfather, had decided to pass the family headship to my father, rather than someone close to them in age. But the nasty part of my mind had no trouble understanding why Great-Aunt Stregaria was still unmarried, despite her family ties. There wasn't enough wealth and power in the world to make someone willingly spend the rest of their life with her. Mum cleared her throat. "Where is Alana?" Bella looked up. "I haven't seen her all day, Mum." I froze as the realization crashed into my head. I'd left Alana frozen, and she was still frozen. It was the only explanation of why she hadn't made it to dinner. Alana admired Great-Aunt Stregaria, even though she feared the old crone too. And besides, she knew better than to be late. Alana had always taken the social niceties more seriously than either Bella or me. Dad eyed me suspiciously. He practically had a sixth sense for when one of us had done something not allowed.
"Caitlin."
I wanted to lie, but I knew better. I reflected her spell onto her and left her frozen in the cupboard near my workroom, I said. She must still be trapped. My father gave me a look that promised trouble later, then rang the bell for the maid. When Lucy appeared, he told her where to find Alana and escort her to the dining room as quickly as possible. I groaned inwardly, kicking myself for forgetting. Alana wouldn't have time to change, let alone do anything else. She'd have to come to the table in her afternoon dress. My parents might not object much to us casting spells on each other, but they'd be annoyed if we made them look bad in front of outsiders. And Great-Aunt Stregaria would rub it in as much as possible. We sat in uncomfortable silence until Alana arrived, her face a mask that concealed pure rage. I would have to watch my back for the next few days. Alana would slam a hex into me as soon as she got a chance. And while I could protect myself now, to some extent, she knew I wasn't invulnerable. She was certainly smart enough to think of a way to get around my protections.
"Be seated,"
Dad said. His dark eyes swept the table.
"Let us give thanks to our ancestors for our lineage."
I cupped my hands over the table and muttered the prayer under my breath. I'd been told that my ancestors looked down on us from the realm of the dead, but I didn't really believe it. My ancestors had probably turned their backs on me a long time ago. And I wasn't sure my father believed it either, although he was careful to keep the family shrine in good repair. But Great-Aunt Stregaria would have called him out for dishonoring our ancestors if he'd missed the prayer. My father rang the bell again.
"Let us eat."
I did my best to ignore the looming presence of Great-Aunt Stregaria and the nasty looks Alana sent me from time to time, as we ate our way through a 5-course meal. Henry had outdone himself, as always. I would have enjoyed the carrot soup and roast lamb if I hadn't been uneasily aware that the real business would be conducted over dessert. Great-Aunt Stregaria had to have a reason to visit, after all. Something had to have changed recently to make her visit us. And I could only think of one thing that had changed, and make my parents let her in the house.
"The trade dispute with Salonika has been resolved in our favor," Great-Aunt Stregaria said.
She spent much of her time in Tintagel, the capital of the Kingdom of Tintagel. I couldn't help wondering why King Rufus hadn't banished her to some distant estate years ago.
"You should be seeing more trading ships over the next few years."
"That is good," my father said. "And the disagreement with Valona?"
"It remains unresolved," Great-Aunt Stregaria informed him. "Valona is unwilling to make border concessions unless we resolve the issue of access to what remains of the Eternal City."
Alana leaned forward.
"I thought they could just sail around to the Inner Sea and travel directly to the Eternal City."
Great-Aunt Stregaria sneered at her.
"Everyone knows that the waters around the Eternal City are infested with monsters," she said in the tone one would use to address a very stupid child. "Sailing ships cannot reach the city with any guarantee of return."
Alana looked crushed. I was torn between feeling sorry for her and an odd guilty pleasure in her humiliation. She'd treated me poorly for years. I'd spent more time than I cared to think about as a frog or a toad or something inanimate, purely because Alana had wanted to practice her hexes. And yet she didn't deserve to be verbally shredded by a woman old enough to be her grandmother. Great-Aunt Stregaria didn't look remotely ashamed. I was very glad she'd never had children.
"We are currently haggling over access rights through the Blighten Pass," Great-Aunt Stregaria continued, ignoring my mother's sharp look with practiced ease. "But His Majesty is reluctant to allow complete access unless we have the right to inspect caravans leaving the Cursed Lands."
"One would consider it pointless," Alana muttered.
She shot me a sharp look. "There's only one secret to be found, isn't there?"
"Correct,"
Great-Aunt Stregaria said. She turned to look at me. "And now that secret is out." I tried to look back evenly, although she was sizing me up like a piece of meat on the market stall. There was only one secret from the Eternal City that everyone wanted. The secret of how to make objects of power. Objects of power had been what turned a relatively small city in a poorly populated region into the master of much of the known world. But the secret of how they'd been made had been lost when the city fell. And I'd cracked that secret weeks ago. And word is spreading, I thought. Dad had taken me from the school immediately after my duel with Isabella. But the rumors had already started. By now they would be halfway around the world. No wonder Great-Aunt Stregaria came to visit. Great-Aunt Stregaria turned her attention back to my father.
"It has become common for an aristocratic child to be fostered in the home of a distant relative," she said. "Such practices are meant to teach the child social graces and introduce the young one to society without the distracting presence of a pair of doting parents. Many of my friends are playing host to children from across the kingdom, and even outside it. The youngsters are gaining much from being fostered."
"From being in the capital," I finished, "and meeting people who will grow up to be the next generation of rulers and generals, and everything else a society needs to work." I understood how it worked, even though I'd never liked it. I'd grown up in Shalit, where there were hundreds of aristocratic children. I knew everyone who was powerful, or likely to become so, when their parents died. And yet my lack of magic ensured that they had never really been my peers. I had been an outcast. But someone who grew up on a distant country estate might be the only aristocratic child for miles around. Socializing with children far below their lofty birth just was not done. Sending them to be fostered was the only logical solution. "Unless you decide to spend time with the commoners instead," I thought. Rose was a common-born girl, and she was my best friend. And she was a powerful magician. She might have been more powerful than either of my sisters if she'd been trained from birth. But hardly anyone would do that outside school. Great-aunt Stregaria was still speaking.
"Such an arrangement has many advantages for the parents as well," she added.
She sounded faintly amused.
"Quite apart from being free of their little darlings for several years, save for the occasional home visit, they gain access to a network of society patrons and clients who are willing to promote them to the king."
"We are aware of the tradition," my mother said flatly.
Her voice was toneless, but I knew from bitter experience that that meant she was angry.
"Is there a point to this discussion?"
I blinked. Mum was rarely so rude. She must be really upset. Great-aunt Stregaria looked back at her, then at me.
"Isn't it obvious?"
Her eyes bored into mine. I looked away.
"I would like to foster Caitlin in Tintagel."
Chapter 3. My mouth dropped open in shock. I had never considered, not even in my wildest dreams, that I would be fostered. There was no real benefit to fostering a city-born child, although I knew that some children from Shalit had been fostered in Tintagel. And my lack of magic ensured that I would only shame more of my relatives if I had been sent to the capital. There had been times when I'd expected to be banished from the country, but that would have been different. People wouldn't have asked me too many questions if I'd been sent to a distant estate and told to stay there. My heart started to pound in terror. I didn't want to be sent away. I didn't want to be fostered. And I certainly didn't want to live with Great-aunt Stregaria. My parents had been strict at times, and too lenient at others. But I had never really doubted that they loved me. Great-aunt Stregaria didn't love me, or anyone else as far as I could tell. None of us, not even Alana, came up to her standards. The thought of spending my days trapped with the old crone was nightmarish.
"I know everyone in the capital," Great-aunt Stregaria said,
turning her attention back to my father.
"Caitlin would be introduced to everyone, her talents put to work for the good of the kingdom and the family. She would move in the highest circles, wanting for nothing. I would see to it that her name is on everyone's lips."
Alana made a strangled sound. My mother shot her a look that silenced her as effectively as any freeze spell. I barely noticed. My body was frozen, held in place by fear. I was painfully aware that my mouth was still open, yet I couldn't close it. My parents wouldn't send me to the capital, would they? Not with Great-aunt Stregaria. And yet I knew that the old woman was right about the possible advantages. A strong family presence in Tintagel would be very useful to us in the future. "Except this isn't about me or the family," I thought numbly. "It's about her."
"She would have a suite, a whole wing of her own," Great-aunt Stregaria assured my parents. "There would be servants and tutors, all trained to prepare her for entry at the very highest level of society. She would be surrounded by friends who would ease her into the social scene. She would be presented to the king and..."
"I wouldn't make that decision without consulting my daughter," Dad said.
He sounded oddly amused, although there was a hard edge to his voice. I'd always had the feeling that he disliked his aunt, even though he was very polite to her. But then he'd often told us that we sometimes needed to be polite to people we didn't like.
"And she is quite young."
"Youngsters have been fostered from 5 before,"
Great-aunt Stregaria pointed out. She spoke as though it was a done deal, as though my agreement and theirs was little more than a formality.
"It would be shameful indeed if she waited until she was 19 before being presented to the king."
I shivered. Traditionally, young aristocratic girls were presented at court when they came of age to marry, although I'd assumed I would never make my debut. My lack of magic shamed my family. Who would want to marry a girl who couldn't cast a single spell? And besides, I rather doubted my father would take a few weeks off to travel to the capital, just to present his daughter to the court. He was important enough that he didn't need to bother.
"We had always intended to allow our daughters to make their debut when they came of age," my mother said. The warning in her voice was clear, if Great-Aunt Stregaria cared to hear. "They do not have to be presented at court or introduced to His Majesty before then."
"No,"
Great-Aunt Stregaria agreed. "But the sooner Caitlin is presented, the sooner she can take her place in society."
Alana shifted but said nothing. Her face wasn't as immobile as she thought. I knew she was fuming, perhaps even planning something stupid. She had looked forward to the day she was presented at court, even if there were two other sisters to steal some of the limelight. Hearing Great-Aunt Stregaria planning to present me ahead of time had to sting. It was rare, very rare, for anyone to be granted such an honor. And the only time I recalled it happening in my lifetime had been when the heir challenged his guardian for early emancipation, after his guardian had abused his position.
"Caitlin is a child," my mother said flatly. "And she has no reason to enter society ahead of time. We are still alive. Even if we died tomorrow, my family would assume guardianship until Caitlin and her sisters came of age."
"Her talents make her important indeed," Great-Aunt Stregaria countered. "She must be properly prepared for her future role."
Dad's scowl deepened.
"And you feel you can prepare her?"
"She will have the very best of tutors," Great-Aunt Stregaria said. "I will even take her with me when I negotiate on behalf of the family. She will learn how to use her talents for us."
"For you," I thought.
"Cat cannot be unique," Alana pointed out. "Even if there is something about her that cannot be duplicated by a magician, there will be others like her."
Great-Aunt Stregaria smiled, humorlessly.
"But can you make objects of power?"
Alana lowered her eyes.
"No."
I looked down at my empty plate. Alana was right. I couldn't be unique. The stories of the Thousand-Year Empire had included more objects of power than I could make in 1,000 years. There had to be other zeros out there somewhere. But finding them might be difficult. It would be easy, all too easy, to find people who had never cast a single spell, but still had a talent for magic. Rose hadn't been found until she'd turned 12. I'd been lucky, I realized dully. I'd been raised in a family where my lack of magic had been noticeable, but also where I'd been trained to do everything from calculate magical runic diagrams to brewing potions and forging artifacts. My family might just have hit the jackpot at 1,000,000 to 1 odds against. If I'd grown up on a farm, like Rose, my lack of magic might never have been noticed. No one would have cared if I couldn't start a fire with a single word.
"Caitlin," Dad said. "Do you want to go with her?"
I hesitated. Did I dare say no? Great-Aunt Stregaria took my hesitation for indecision.
"You will find that you have many more opportunities for using your talents in the capital," she said. "And it will make you a very influential girl."
"And help you too," I muttered.
"Quite,"
Great-Aunt Stregaria said. Was that a glimmer of actual approval in her eye? It didn't seem likely. I was probably imagining it.
"High society is about trading favors, young lady. You help me, and I will help you."
You'll use me as a puppet, I thought. It made a distressing amount of sense. I was the only zero, the only known zero. Great-Aunt Stregaria would praise me, use me, and then discard me when I had outlived my usefulness. I knew too much about high society to feel comfortable in the capital. Charlotte was a little more dignified, but there was still far too much backbiting and not-so-covert infighting as the various magical families fought for supremacy. and Great-Aunt Stregaria was a mistress of it. She'd practically tie me to the forge and force me to churn out objects of power, using them as bargaining chips to raise her status. She would have a monopoly, I told myself. I would be too far from my parents for them to intervene, and the sky would be the limit.
There is much I could do for you, Great-Aunt Stregaria added. I have connections to many of the greatest families. It would be easy to arrange a match between you and a suitable young man of noble blood when you come of age.
Alana made a choking noise. Beside her, Bella had an unconvincing coughing fit. Alana had told me, they'd both told me, that I would never get married. Who would want to marry a girl without magic? The lack of magic might be catching. And yet, I'm too young to get married, I mumbled. I had 4 years until I came of age. Even then, there was no guarantee I'd get married at once. My parents had been in their 20s when they'd married. My sisters and I were aristocrats. Any prospective match would have to be carefully scrutinized by both sets of parents before they gave their approval. Marriage in haste, we'd been told, inevitably led to repenting at leisure.
I can't even... We could discuss betrothals, Great-Aunt Stregaria said. I believe...
No,
Mum said flatly. I shot her a grateful look. I knew there were girls and boys who were betrothed from birth, but the custom had been slowly going out of fashion. My parents had discussed such issues with us during their endless and boring etiquette lessons, yet they'd made it clear that we would have a say in who we married. And a betrothal could cause legal problems if a grown child decided they didn't want to go through with it. There were families in the city that were still feuding over broken betrothals that had taken place hundreds of years ago.
As you wish, Great-Aunt Stregaria said.
She looked displeased, just for a second.
But there are many other benefits I could offer. You would have friends.
I have a friend here, I protested. It was true. Rose was the first real friend I'd had, perhaps my only one. I'd managed to get on well with Achan Reben, but I was all too aware that his family and mine were long-term enemies. And I'd humiliated his sister too. I didn't know how he'd react to that.
I don't want to leave her. A common-born girl, Great-Aunt Stregaria said.
Her lips twisted into a cold sneer.
A decent magician, perhaps, but hardly the right sort of companion for a girl of the very highest blood. You should be surrounded by girls from your circle, girls who can educate you in the social graces.
I winced. Like Isabella? Or like Alana?
Your friend can come along as your maid, perhaps,
Great-Aunt Stregaria said. She looked just for a moment as if she'd sniffed something disgusting.
It is all a person like her is suited for. Rose is my friend, I snapped.
The hot flash of anger surprised me. Rose had stood by me even when it would have ruined her time at school. I wouldn't have blamed her if she'd attached herself to Isabella or one of the other well-born students, the girls who could have taught her how to use her magic through example. What did I have to offer her?
She isn't a servant. She is a common-born girl with no prospects,
Great-Aunt Stregaria said bluntly.
What will happen to her when she graduates? She will not find a decent position, let alone a decent match, because she is lowly born. She has no dowry, nothing to entice a suitor. She has no patron, no one who will shepherd her career. She is alone in the world. She has me!
I fought to control my anger. It wasn't easy. Insults directed at me were meaningless. I'd been called so many awful things that I was used to it. But Rose... Rose was my friend.
And you think that I will be important?
Great-Aunt Stregaria lifted her eyebrows.
Do you think you will be doing her a favor by patronizing her?
I glared.
Yes. You will not,
Great-Aunt Stregaria said.
And you will certainly not be doing yourself a favor. One must choose one's clients carefully.
I have, I said. It wasn't really true. I never thought I'd have a patronage network of my own, but it didn't matter. Besides, Rose would be a worthy investment, even if I'd hated the ground she walked on. Untrained and unskilled didn't mean weak.